I've begun to look at Psalm 23. I thought it was very appropriate given the circumstances in which we find ourselves and the situation. And I find that this is one of the most encouraging psalms to look at a time when there's so much going on in the world around and about us. And what an encouragement it is to remind ourselves of our relationship with God. David, the author of the psalm, reminds us that God is our shepherd at this particular point in time. We look away from ourselves, we look unto God because we have no confidence or trust in ourselves. And especially in the climate in which you find yourself, when you look around and about and you see the crises and the difficulties that people are confronted with, both in the NHS and in society in general, what you find is that we are not immune from catching coronavirus. It's something that could possibly touch and affect us. It's something that can influence us and create within us a sense of fear and dread within society, as people are looking around about and wondering whether or not, you know, if they caught it, what would happen. But it has done one particular thing, and that is to focus men's minds. People are asking questions about what's going to happen after the coronavirus has come under control. I was reading a report even yesterday about, I think it was something like 90% of people said that their lives would never be the same again after the coronavirus has been sorted out. And they would all have life-changing experiences. And in many ways, the world at large has been forced to consider their own mortality, the thought that if they possibly caught this illness, this virus, that there was the possibility that they could die and possibly what would happen afterwards. And it seems that one of the wonderful things for Christians is that when we consider our state and our condition before God, we are reminded that in this psalm, there are so many blessings and benefits that are offered and given to Christians. We can see here the psalmist going through and reflecting upon the time when he himself was a shepherd looking after the sheep. He was looking after his father's sheep. And at that particular time, he could refer back to it and remind himself of the wonders of what God is doing with him at that moment of time, when he thought about the times when he would have looked after his own sheep and his father's sheep. And at that time, he could reflect upon what God was doing in his life and in his situation. The conflict in which the world finds itself is they have no place of retreat. But for the Christian, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it, that we can go back and remind ourselves of who we are in relation to this God. And what we find is that the amazing thing is that God has entered into this relationship with us. Very often, as we have sung this morning, even about God being our king, it seems to us to be far more appropriate to think of God ruling and reigning supreme in heaven, and that all are subjected and subdued by him. But yet, for all of that, isn't it, David takes this very homely picture of God, because as a shepherd, he would have possibly named the sheep that he had, and he would have known them in a very intimate way. He would have known their certain characteristics. He would have understood all of these things. And so when he's speaking about God being our shepherd, he wants to remind them that they have this wonderful and this unique relationship with God, that God is so different from all others that we can think about. He is the shepherd of the sheep. He is the one who has condescended to make himself known unto us and who has come to us. And his logic is simply this, that if the Lord is my shepherd, then I shall not want, I shall not ever be in need. And so you find that David, as he reflects upon God, he shows to us what kind of God he is. It's interesting, the term that David uses here. I don't know if you ever noticed that different words are used to describe God when he is called Lord. As sometimes it's used with a capital, and then as we have here, all letters are in capitals. And the whole point is that what David wants to remind these people about is that the person that he is describing here, who is described as the Lord, the one who is our great and glorious shepherd, this one, he wants to remind these people, is none other than Jehovah or Yahweh. The reason why we have a distinction and a difference today is that there were people in the 7th century who were called the Masoretes, who basically wrote out the text. And if you know anything about Hebrew, then you'll know that originally it didn't have any vowels in it, so they had to insert them. They only had sounds, so they had to insert these. And so they devised a system in the 7th century to do this. But when it came to this particular word, and they had a real problem, because it was such a highly regarded name of God that they were fearful to insert any vowels. And so they left it. And because they left it, of course, we ourselves today don't quite know how to give this word its full meaning or its full sense. And so the old people used to translate this and insert different vowels. But we today only insert two vowels. And so we describe him as Yahweh. This is the covenant-keeping God. This is the God that we read about, who is the creator of all things, the one that we read about, who is the maker of everything that we see around and about us. This great, magnificent, glorious God, this one who is high and lifted up, this one who has entered into a covenant relationship with these people there in the Old Testament. He himself has condescended to come into this relationship, not merely to relate to them as a great king, but this far, far more intimate connection, and that is that he is their shepherd. He is the one that has been designated in this way. And we see in this particular psalm the role that the shepherd is to perform. For example, we see, don't we, there in verse 2, that he makes me to lie in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He is to be the provider for all the sheep. He is the one who is to reach out to them, lead them and direct them to waters that and food that will sustain and keep them. He is also the one who is to be their protector in verse 4. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. You are rod, you are staff, they comfort me. So we see this dual aspect of God in the provider. On the one hand, he makes provision for us in our needs and all the needs that we have. And then on the other hand, he is the one who protects us, watches over us and keeps us and sustains us through every trial and situation in which we find ourselves in the world today. Coronavirus or no coronavirus, God remains constant in the relationship that he has with us. He is the one who sustains us and keeps us. He is the one who is protecting us at this moment of time. An interesting psalm is, there's another psalm which describes God as being the shepherd of Israel. In Psalm 80 and verse 1, he says, like, let's give you, O shepherd of Israel, you who lead yourself like a flock, you who dwell between the cherubim, shine forth. Restore us, O God, cause your face to shine, and we shall be saved. What a wonderful picture that you have of God there, that the Lord is being portrayed as not only the shepherd of Israel, but the one who is seated between the cherubim. In the Old Testament, of course, you had the Ark of the Covenant and the molding of two cherubim on either side and their wings arching over this Ark of the Covenant. And the picture was that God was seated there upon that throne. And here is the writer, as he's describing the shepherd of Israel, he was summoning God, as it were, to come to restore his people. He's asking them to intervene in the situation in which they find themselves. He is calling upon God, and he is saying, shine forth, make bare your arm, manifest yourself, come restore the people in the situation in which we find ourselves today. And we too can be like that, can't we? We can be like the people of old, crying out and calling and to God, pleading with God to remember us in the situation in which we find ourselves, in the conflict, the difficulties, and the problems around and about us. But here is the author saying to us, this great and wonderful shepherd, he is so high and lifted up, he's such a great God. What do you find with the prophet Isaiah, for example? You get Isaiah, he in that great chapter, chapter 40, where if you read through the whole of the chapter, it's a description really of who God is and what God is like. The greatness, the superiority of God, the magnificence. Not only is he the creator, but he is invested with all power, all authority, everything resides in God. He has absolute power. And yet for all of that, though he is such a great and glorious God, what you do find is that he is a God who is sensitive to our situation, the difficulties and the problems that we have. And here the prophet Isaiah, when he's writing here, he says in verse 10, he says, "Behold, the Lord God shall come with a strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. He will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom and gently lead those who are with young." It's interesting, isn't it? But even in the midst of this tremendous and glorious chapter where God is being portrayed as an all-powerful, almighty God, yet in the midst of that, the sensitivity of God towards his sheep, how that he will gather them as lambs, he will carry them in his bosom. There is this embrace of God. He is infinitely interested in the sheep. And of course, the reason why he's intimated in the sheep, of course, is the sheep define his role as a shepherd. Without them, he would be no shepherd, or he couldn't be a shepherd. But here you have Isaiah saying, look at what God is really like. But you know, when we consider this, isn't it, we think for a moment, isn't it, there is a switchover, isn't there? God in the Old Testament is portrayed as the shepherd of Israel, and David saying, he's my shepherd. But then there is this switchover, isn't there, into the New Testament. We all remember, don't we, those great words of Jesus that he is the good shepherd, and the good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. And it's almost as if Jesus himself takes up and adopts this position, this situation, that he himself wants to continue, bring about this continuity of thought with regards to God as being our shepherd. And he has come, the incarnate God, he is the one who has come into this world, and he has taken up this role as the good shepherd. This is the relationship that he has with his apostles, with his disciples, those who were around and about him at that time. He had this wonderful relationship with them, that he was warm towards them, he loved them, he cared for them, and he was very intimate with them. And so you find Jesus saying to them that they are his sheep. I have come. I am the good shepherd. I am the one who has come. I'm the one who's caring for you. I'm the one who is the shepherd incarnate, the one who has come into this world. And what you find is that his disciples, of course, came to realize what a wonderful person Jesus was in their relationship with him. There's a great verse in the book of Zechariah in chapter 13 where it describes God speaking. We could say he was speaking to Jesus in many ways, and he says like this, "To arise, O sword, against my shepherd, the man who is my equal." And it's interesting that that particular verse was used by Jesus when he was describing the time when he was about to leave his disciples. He was about to be abandoned by them. And when he quotes this particular verse, it stimulates within them such a sense of concern. Let me just read to you from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 26, for a moment. And then verse 31, it says like this, "Then Jesus said to them, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered." This is the quotation back there in the book of Zechariah in chapter 13. And he says, "But after I am raised, I will go before you to Galilee." And Peter answered and said to him, "Even if all are made to stumble before, because of you, I will never be made to stumble." And we know the end result of that, as I mentioned on Wednesday. But the whole point is this. The amazing thing is this, that Jesus wants to show his connection with the Old Testament, bringing it through into the New Testament, showing that he is the one who has come. the great shepherd of the sheep. And in our New Testament context today, it's us looking, yes, unto God there in the Old Testament as the shepherd of Israel, but looking more so at this moment of time to Jesus as being the good shepherd, the great shepherd, the one who is caring for us, looking after us in our given situation now. This is what he is to us at this moment of time. And of course, as I've already mentioned, the fact that what constitutes him as a shepherd is the fact of who the sheep are. And the sheep, of course, are described unto him. These are his sheep. These are those who are belonging to Jesus at this moment of time. And what makes them and constitute them to be his sheep? It's interesting that not all people are the sheep of God or of the Lord Jesus Christ. Not everybody can be described as being one of his sheep. There is something very unique about a person being able to say, the Lord is my shepherd. This is something that not every individual on this planet can say. Not every person can describe himself as being one of the sheep of Jesus. In actual fact, what you find is in Matthew chapter 26, for example, you get Jesus describing a situation, the judgment of the world, and he describes a situation where the sheep and the goats are being separated and parted. So you have a world in which we live at this moment of time that is divided in two sections, the section which are described as being the sheep of Jesus and the section which are being described as those who are the goats, those who are not of his fold, they don't belong to Jesus. But here is David saying, well, the Lord is my shepherd. And the wonderful thing is that he could say it. He had the certainty. He had that conviction in his heart and in his soul that the Lord was his shepherd. And I suppose I could ask you, couldn't I, you know, do we have that certainty, that assurance, that conviction in our hearts and souls that the Lord is our shepherd? And I suppose we could even go a little bit further and ask the question, well, how can we know if the Lord is our shepherd? How can we know beyond any shadow of doubt that this Lord, who is the creator, the sovereign over all things, has condescended in the person of his son, Jesus Christ, to become our shepherd, to be the one who is caring for us through life and death, the one who in his providence watches over us and cares for us, protects us, feeds us, does all of these things for us? How can we know that? Well, David here had the certainty, because if you read in verse 3, as he says like this, that this shepherd is the one, he says, he restores my soul, he leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Here is something that God had done to this particular person. There is something that has taken place in the soul and in the heart of this man, David, that he describes it as being the one who has restored my soul. God has done something to me. He has changed me. He has done something within me. Something has happened to me. We would perhaps describe it in New Testament terms as he was born again. He had experienced something of the work of God's Holy Spirit, that he had come and he had changed this particular person. He had changed him from being one thing to becoming another thing. And that is, this person suddenly, mysteriously, becomes one of God's sheep. And there is this transition from being outside of the flock of God to suddenly coming into it. God himself comes and God himself does something to this particular person. There is a change and a transformation, such a change and transformation in actual fact that it has such an impact upon the life of the individual. Because the individual who has this experience, and I know many of you who are in the church with us in Bethel, I've known this and experienced this. There is this change and transformation. This new birth has taken place. The culmination of it is that it presents us with a changed life. It causes us to be different, different in society, different from society. Because here does David say, look, he restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. In other words, the change and the transformation that has come upon this person is such that he has changed him from a person who is openly rebellious against God to a person who is now submissive to God, a person who wants to please God, a person who wants to live in such a way that God is pleased with his life and with his conduct, with his lifestyle, how he conducts himself in situations with other people and with God himself. And so you see here, he has been led in the paths of righteousness, but it's not simply that he has been led in this way just simply for his own benefit, but it is ultimately to reflect something of who God is. It is done, as he says here, for his name's sake, for God's name's sake, for God to make these people his own children, his own sheep. And these people now are going to reflect something of what God is ultimately like. One of the things about this pandemic in which we find ourselves now, isn't it, is the fact that they're discussing now the possibility that it developed in somewhere in China, not necessarily from the marketplace, but was there in a scientific laboratory, and somebody, one particular person, contracted it, and from that one person, everything developed from that. The one person went out, infected other people, and it spread like that, and it's become a worldwide pandemic. Now, in many ways, it's an easy illustration to take, because what you get in the New Testament is that the picture is presented to us of how sin has entered into the world. And sin entered in, says the Apostle Paul, through one man. And so he says, and because sin entered in by one man, that is Adam, of course, death came in by sin. And so death passed upon all men. Now, we may fear, perhaps, the possibility of catching coronavirus, the effect of it, and it could kill us. And, you know, if you watch the news a lot, there's nobody find is that so much is said there about percentages and how many people have contracted it and how many people have died from it and how many people have died in hospital, how many people have died in nursing homes. So many different ways in which you can look at it. But it's not 100% fatal, is it? For some, it's fatal. For others, it's just a minor cough or cold, as it were, symptoms. But in this, the fatality rate is 100%. You know, we are born in sin. We are born to die. We are as dead men walking in this world at large. We find ourselves in that situation. The situation is that not only does the apostle tell us that through one man sin entered into the world and death by sin, but he goes on in chapter 5 of the book of Romans and he wants to describe that through the obedience of one man, life has come. Life and transformation, life and change. And this has come through Jesus, isn't it? The Jesus that we read about, who is the good shepherd who gives his life for the sheep. There is something wonderful about what Jesus himself has done for us, what he has achieved for us. And through him, there is a cure, there is a remedy for the plight of man. The remedy and the solution has been brought about by God through Jesus Christ. And in this, we can rejoice. And we can see here that for me to be one of the sheep of God, it is to come to Jesus. It is to come to this place, this recourse, where there is hope, there is a remedy, there is a cure. And there is only one place, and that one place is to be found in Jesus Christ. It's interesting that when you look at the prophet Isaiah again, he describes us, he says like this, that all we like sheep have gone astray. And that is the defining point, isn't it? It tells us we have all gone, not just some of us, you know, not one or two of us, not, you know, the worst people in society, but all we like sheep have gone astray. We've all gone our own way. Our attitude and our thoughts about God are such that we drift away, we have no thought for God, we live in a world, as it were, without God. But there is a time when these sheep come to a place and come to a position where they return back unto God. They come again back to the person of Jesus. The Apostle Peter, in actual fact, he reminds the people to whom he was writing. And he says like this to them in 1 Peter 2 and verse 25. He says that we were all going astray, but have now returned unto the shepherd and overseer of our souls. That's where we were, he says. We were all going astray. You know, we were all going in our own way, in our own direction. We were so involved and taken up with our own lives. But now, he says, we have returned. We've come back unto the shepherd and overseer of our souls. It's a wonderful thing to come to that place whereby you come to trust in Jesus Christ. It is a wonderful thing to come to that place whereby we are overwhelmed with a sense of who Jesus is. This was returning, coming back to Jesus. And who is he? He is the one that he is described there as being the shepherd, an overseer of our souls. What the Christian does is he entrusts his soul to Jesus. He puts himself in the hands of Jesus. He says to Jesus, take my life, take me all, everything, me as an individual, I'm looking unto you. And the thing is this, isn't it, that there is this tremendous change and transformation when a person does that. What happens is the very way in which he looks at life, the way in which he thinks upon the world at large, it's no longer that he's thinking of himself as an individual. It's no longer that he's looking at the world around and about him and what interests him is all that concerns him. But suddenly, he's confronted with the reality of who Jesus is. This is the eternal Son of God. This is the one who has come into the world. This is the one who has done such wonderful things for us, dying at Calvary. This is the one that I have returned to. This is the one who cares for my soul. This is the one who has taken it upon himself, the responsibility to take me all through life and bring me out at the other end. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. What an encouragement it is for those who have returned to Jesus. How can we return to Jesus? It's only by faith. It's only by faith. There is a verse in the book of Hebrews in chapter 11. It says that he who comes unto God must first believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them who diligently seek him. And it's like that when you come to Jesus. If you don't believe, you will never come. You can't see him, but you can believe in him. He is there to receive and to accept all who turn to him. And this is the wonderful thing, isn't it? That here is Jesus, this great shepherd of the sheep, this one who reaches out, as we saw in Isaiah, to embrace, to bring the sheep, to carry them on his shoulders, to carry them in his bosom, to bring them even unto the very gates of heaven itself, that he might lead them there, bring them through the very portals of heaven itself, there to dwell in the presence of God. What an assurance you can have of life and death. God in his providence caring for you. God bringing us to that place of salvation, bringing us to heaven itself, into glory, that we might always live in his presence. I will dwell, says David. In the Old Testament, how much far, far more explicit it is in the New Testament. In my Father's house are many mansions, Jesus said. And if it were not so, I would have told you. And I go and prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. In other words, Jesus will embrace us. Jesus will embrace us and bring us into the place of glory and splendor, into the presence of his Father. So we trust in God that each one of us might truly know this shepherd to be our shepherd.